Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Very special edition of Real Nerds Podcast. I am Ryan, and I am joined by two legends that I can't believe I get a chance to talk to. Miss Adrienne King, Miss Amy Steele, obviously from Friday the 13th and Friday the 13th Part 2, and many other things have graced me with their presence here today. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, it's great to be here. Really great to be here in Denver.
Yeah, is this your first time in Denver?
Not my first time in Denver. I have family here, but it's my first time at a horror convention in Colorado, in Denver, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So this is fabulous.
That's really fun.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back because this is a horror convention, and I'm lucky because it's also a Friday the 13th. How ironic that I get to talk to you.
This is the lucky day.
This is really a lucky day for someone like me. It's, as a movie fan and as a fan of the franchise, I can't believe I get to sit down with you two. It's kind of surreal, I'll be honest, because... As you grow up, you know, I remember the first one I saw was Part 4. And then they had the little, you know, clips, montages at the beginning. And so then I had to go back and watch him again. And my parents were always cool because I was really young. But they always let me get any movies I wanted at the video store. And my mom was always worried I'd turn out really weird because I'd always get Friday the 13th constantly. So I'm going to go back to 1979 probably, and your journey to Friday the 13th, Adrienne. How did you become involved, and how did you feel about getting this gig?
Well, it was huge. Every actor and actress under the age of 30 probably auditioned for it in New York City. The summer of 79, it was a long summer. Call back, screen test, ding, ding, ding. I got the call from the director that said, "You're our final girl." And we started shooting the day after Labor Day, 1979, at Camp Novi Bosco, which is North Burton Boy Scouts, not an Indian name, or the
Wampanoag. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right?
Wow, so I'm gonna jump around a bit because the movie came out and it was such a huge hit. And then how did you become involved? Because now it's kind of, it's its own thing now, because Friday 13th blew up as an independent film that is became the highest grossing independent film of all time. And now you have to carry the mantle of 5 years later. And how did that come about for you as well?
Well, I was in New York and got the call for the audition. And at the time, I'm like, Friday the 13th Part 1, first one, just blew up and it was amazing and everybody loved it. But for an actor, I was 20 years old at the time, 19 or 20, and it wasn't exactly the direction that my career going. And so I was like, I want to do another, I want to do a different film. I want to do a romantic comedy with, you know, John Hughes. Spielberg should be calling me any day now.
Any second.
But, so I said, okay, I'll go to the audition. And so I met Steve Miner there, and there were a lot of people there, I remember. And it was an audition in one of those sort of big Broadway houses, you know, where they
Minskoff Studios.
Yes, yes. Went in there and just kind of like acted like we're at a cabin or I was a counselor or something. I don't think they asked me to scream, but just kind of act menacing, you know. But and then I don't remember it as being as complicated as Adrienne's journey. They just kind of said, okay, you have a part. I'm like, okay. And it was a hard gig for sure. It was, you know, a month and a half at night, cold, running around, creeping myself out, and it was definitely hard. But here I am.
Yeah. 45 years later.
Sitting here talking.
Is that a trip to think
that's
about?
That's surreal. When you said this is surreal.
Yeah.
The fact that we're sitting with you 45 years later.
To talk
for
about
me,
that.
To talk about that. Those 7 weeks of my life that I remember better than I do last week.
Wow.
You know what I mean? They're so ingrained because of what Amy said, because the nights were so grueling and it was so intense. And it's not like my mom said, I was hoping you'd go do Desdemona over in London at the Royal Academy. This is not what I thought. You know, I don't think we could ever have imagined anything of this
at
nature.
At that time, it was only Adrienne Barbeau was really the sort of horror person at that time. And I mean, she had a great stand-in. I mean, she was very respectable.
Sigourney Weaver for Alien. But that was more of a side.
That was more sci-fi.
Yeah, that was sci-fi.
It wasn't the same.
Yeah.
It wasn't. Carrie was the one with Sissy Spacek that they robbed. Victor Miller will tell you, and so will Sean, that they just did, you know, took the jump scare from. And so, but we were the first ones that did anything with women being the final girl, where a woman can survive.
Well, King Kong.
And I love this. Do you know that Faye Ray did over 300 films?
Wow.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I say.
See, I should have done part three.
Right? Right? I mean, but all she's known for is this one, King Kong. So look, we saved ourselves at least 287 films.
So you talk, because I wasn't there to experience it in the theaters, Adrian. And to me, Friday 13th, obviously the kills are memorable, but to me the memorable part is the villain. It's something out of left field and you don't expect it because you're so nice on screen and, you know, when Betsy Palmer's up, she's so nice.
Yeah.
And then...
And everyone knew her from being the sweetheart in game shows, but prior to that she always played beautiful leading ladies with the best of the actors, you know.
But she's always smart.
Very
smart. She had a lot going on.
Yeah,
she could hold two concerts.
She reminds me of Ginny. Yeah, Ginny. You know, Alice was a timid artist. You know, all she wanted to do was get through the night.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully Bill would still be there, but then he was gone and, oh my God, if she was on her own. You know, but what I love about how it progressed was that the final girl actually became intelligent, not just using her brawn and her, you know, her just
boobs.
Yeah.
Boobs, yes. Thank you. Otherwise, I would have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, me too.
You talk about how hard it was because you and Betsy really go at it.
Oh, yeah.
And
no stunt people.
It doesn't, you can.
No stunt doubles. Couldn't afford them. We were low, low, low budget.
And so, how long did it take to shoot that?
One bloody night on the beach. And it was cold, and it was as the sun set until the sun rose, and it was choreographed. I literally have the original notes because he threw them away after that night and went, no, because we ran out of money so often, I figured I would create, I'm an artist first, so always have been, I will create a collage of my experience from Polaroids have been thrown out and, you know, little things that I picked up from the trash. It was a brutal night, and I wasn't going to forget it, so I had that piece of paper. Well, when I tell you she's slamming my head into the sand and it looks so real, it's because she's slamming my head in the sand. I mean, she said to me, before we get on to this beach, I'm not holding back. The camera sees everything. And if you want to live, you're going to fight back. And so we were both trained method. Obviously, she had many more years of practice. She was lethal on the beach. But we both, at sunrise, it went from sunset to sunrise. We both hobbled off bruised and battered and bloodied, actually, from that incredible night of filming, but it still holds up. Like Betsy says, we didn't fool anybody, you know, the camera, bang.
And so, Amy, yours is crazy too, because, I mean, the first film has this chase and the intensity comes from the performance from Betsy, But in yours, intensity comes from Jason and his constant pursuit of you. And that wasn't over one night, was it? Because that one, it takes place in different locations.
Oh, yeah, no. That was every single night. Sleeping or waking. No, it was shot the whole time, the whole month. I mean, you got this one, then this one, then this one. Then Jason's lair was a whole other deal, you know, with the sweater reveal. stepping in through that creek. See, it's all fresh in my mind because a couple weeks ago we just saw the film again.
That's so, right. At Mahoning Drive-In.
Yeah.
110-foot screen with a 35mm original.
Oh. Print.
Yeah.
That's too fun.
Pretty awesome.
That's too fun. So what were the audience's reactions back then when Betsy shows up, where they think she was like the comforting thing? Because I know that's the way Sean always said that's how he wanted it to be shot. Yeah. That you see her and you're like, oh, she's here. It's fine.
I think we all found out at the same moment that Mrs. Voorhees was a little bonkers. Or just loved her son a whole lot more than most.
Yeah, is she really a villain? I don't know. I mean,
hey, you know, if somebody had done that to me, my son, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows how you're going to react? Right? And for the intensity of yours, because there was, did it hurt? Like, because you're always falling and you're always like running, and I think it's lost in people who take horror films for granted how hard it is to constantly be scared, constantly be running. How do you get past that while you're filming? Is it an adrenaline thing or?
Well, it's huge adrenaline, Mike, but you know what I was thinking? Is that in her film, and also you see Betsy Palmer, it's like, oh. In my film, all of a sudden Muffin comes in that door and you're like, yeah. Oh, the music, cue the music. At that time we shot that scene, there was high speed cameras. And so I had to look relieved, like, but I know that in 10 seconds, this guy's gonna come through the room and the camera, the high speed camera goes, so I'm like, going in the back of my head, this engine, and Jason's gonna come through the window. So that's a huge amount of adrenaline. I mean, if I'm sitting here right now saying somebody's gonna come through that door, which they just did, and you're kind of like that. It's you work it up. It's adrenaline in your body, whether you're method or whether you're just gonna call it in, you can.
Mm. Yeah. Same thing with when we shot the last scene, in the lake with the boy, my dream, coming out of the lake. The first time we did that, I fell out of camera range and I only had one other pair of jeans and the light was so important. And I had to get back. And we had this. We had the high speed. We had the slow mo. We had the slow mo and the two other cameras going. And I had to totally block out everything. I already knew how cold that water was.
Right.
Block out everything that's going on around me, knowing that the entire film depended on this very moment because we're leaving the beach afterwards. We're done. This is the last shot of the movie.
And there wasn't money for another shot.
No.
So it would have been your fault.
All my fault if it hadn't, you know.
So you have adrenaline and anxiety.
Yes.
Throughout
yes.
it because.
And yet, did you know? Did you know I knew?
No. It's
that's called training.
But, you know, because I think Right Friday 13th works so well, especially the first two, is they subvert your expectations.
Right.
You know. I mean, I'd always argue that the jump scare in Friday 13th is better than the Carrie one, just me. But I think it's actually more terrifying. But, you know, and then it opens with you dying, which is
what
shocking.
What movie are you watching?
Yeah.
That's a post-traumatic stress dream within a horrible nightmare. You chop somebody's head off. What do you think happens? Yeah. You go into training. You go into therapy. You go into severe, severe psychological trauma.
Right.
So, poor Alice. You know, she's not dead. She's just, she's in the woods somewhere.
That pickaxe.
I'll take that. Because yours ends in a dream, too, allegedly, from calling out for Paul. But you just get taken away.
Right.
We just don't know what happens.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what happens. Paramount decided to not pay anybody to come back for the next film.
No, that's what happened to part two.
What do you think happened? Took the old footage and then just applied to the next film and then onward for a whole new crew.
So Final Girl equals she lives and then she dies.
Yes.
Because we don't want to pay Final Girls.
Right.
Is it because you'd event... It costs more money to bring you back for each sequel, and they're like, no, we'll just...
I think for part three, which they offered me, which they gave me a great script, I just read it a couple years ago, I can't believe I turned it down, but anyway. I think what happened is my agents asked for a little bit more money, and they said, meh. And before I knew it, it was kind of over, and at that time in my life, I was a little relieved because it was a hard-ass job.
Yeah. And basically, I had a stalker at the time, and as soon as the first one came out, and so I left it to my people to figure it out, because stalking back then was not discussed in public, and the world is very, very different thanks to stalking laws, but back then, the authorities wouldn't even get involved until I was physically assaulted, quote unquote. They didn't have the law was not on my side, let's just put it that way. So I left it up to people who obviously thought Paramount had made so much money on the first one that maybe we deserved a little bump. Betsy asked for one too. You can see they replaced her in part six with some other woman. They just didn't want to pay the women. I guess they didn't want to pay Jason, that's why he got a mask. Huh? horror was looked down upon back in the day.
That's sad, because to me it's such a great escape, you know, and it's so fun. I love the roller coaster. And I think too, that's why the first two movies hold up so well even now, is because there's a roller coaster to it and you like everybody in it. You don't want anybody to get just taken out.
Well, there's some people you do.
Yeah, but for the most part, we like everybody. And
right. You're supposed to.
Yeah, so thank you for your time. I just want to ask one question before we get out. If you wanted to impart anything from your experience on Friday the 13th on anybody, what would it be?
Stay away from the lake.
Stand up for yourself and kick ass and believe you can do it.
Yes. Cheers to my final girl.
Yes. Thank you, ladies, so much.
Come talk to us.
Yeah.
Ask us all the questions you have been wondering for the past 45 years.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast, Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!